CD 8.
Right, lads, he said. You heard. Pounce and Gaskin, you take the hurry-up wagon up to the bridge and turn it over. Waddy and Nancy Ball, you too, Fred, go and nick some carts. You grew up round here, so don't tell me you've never done that before. I want a couple blocking the streets down here, and the rest, I want you to run them into an alley mouths until they wedge. You men know the area. Block up all the little backways. Colon rubbed his nose. We could do that on the riverside, Sarge, but it's all alleys on the shade side. Can't block them all. I wouldn't worry about those, said Vimes. Cavalry can't come through there. You know what they call a horse in the shades? Colon grinned. Yes, Sarge, lunch. Right. The rest of you, get all the benches and tables out of the watch-house. It dawned on him that none of the men had moved. There was a certain problem in the air. Well? Billy Wiglet removed his helmet and wiped his forehead. How far is this going to go, Sarge? All the way, Billy. But we took the oath, Sarge, and now we're disobeying orders and helping rebels. Doesn't seem right, Sarge, said Wiglet wretchedly. You took an oath to uphold the law and defend the citizens without fear or favour, said Vimes, and to protect the innocent. That's all they put in. Maybe they thought those were the important things. Nothing in there about orders, even from me. You're an officer of the law, not a soldier of the government. One or two of the men looked longingly at the other end of the street, empty and inviting. But I won't stop anyone who wants to walk, said Vimes. They stopped looking.
Hello, Mr. Keel, said a sticky voice behind him.
Yes, Nobby, he said without turning round.
Here, how'd you detect it was me, Sergeant?
It's an amazing talent, kid, said Vimes, turning, against all wisdom, to look at the urchin. What's been happening?
Big riot in St. All Square, Sarge. They say people have broken into Dolly Sister's watch house and thrown the lieutenant out the window. And there's looting all over the place, they say, and the day watch are out chasing people, only most of them are hiding now, because...
Yeah, I get the picture, sighed Vimes. Carcer had been right. Coppers were always outnumbered, so being a copper only worked when people let it work. If they refocused and realised you were just another standard idiot with a penny worth of metal for a badge, you could end up a smear on the pavement. He could hear shouting now a long way off. He looked around at the hesitant watchman. On the other hand, gentlemen, he said, if you are going to leave, where are you going to go to? The same thought had clearly occurred to Colon and the others. We'll get the cots, he said, hurrying off.
And I want a penny, said Nobby, holding out a grubby hand.
To the boy's amazement, Vimes gave him a dollar, saying, and just keep telling me everything, will you? Tables and benches were already being dragged out of the watch house, and after only a couple of minutes, Waddy arrived with a cartload of empty barrels. Barricades were easy in these streets. It was keeping them clear that had always been the problem. The watchmen set to work. This was something they understood. They'd done it when they were kids, and perhaps they thought, hey, this time we're wearing uniforms. We can't be in the wrong. While Vimes was struggling to wedge a bench into the growing wall, he was aware of people behind him. He worked steadily, however, until someone gave a delicate cough. Then he turned. Yes, can I help you? There was a small group of people, and it was clear to Vimes that it was a group pushed together out of shared terror, because by the look of them, they'd have nothing to do with one another if they could possibly avoid it. The spokesman, or at least the one in front, looked almost exactly like the kind of person Vimes had pictured when thinking about the hedge argument murder.
Officer?
Yes, sir.
What, are you doing exactly?
Keeping the peace, sir. This peace, to be exact.
You say that there's rioting and soldiers on the way?
Very likely, sir.
You don't have to ask him, Rutherford. It's his duty to protect us, snapped the woman who was standing beside the man with an air of proprietorship.
Vimes changed his mind about the man. Yes, he had that furtive look of a timid domestic poisoner about him, the kind of man who'd be appalled at the idea of divorce, but would plot woman's slaughter every day. And you could see why. He gave the lady a nice warm smile. She was holding a blue vase.
"Can I help you, ma'am?" he said.
"What are you intending to do about us being murdered in our beds?" she demanded.
"Well, it's not 4 o'clock yet, ma'am, but if you'll let me know when you want to retire."
Vimes was impressed at the way the woman drew herself up. Even Sybil, in full Duchess mode, with the blood of 20 generations of arrogant ancestors behind her, could not have matched her.
"Rutherford, are you going to do something about this man?" she said.
Rutherford looked up at Vimes. Vimes was aware that he was villainously unshaven, dishevelled, dirty, and probably starting to smell. He decided not to load more troubles on the man's back.
"Would you and your lady care to assist with our barricade?" he said.
"Oh, yes, thank you, very," Rutherford began, but was outgunned again.